For a second Saturday in succession, the town left it late to rescue a point when they drew 1-1 with Notts Forest at Kenilworth Road. To review the game, alongside me, I've got the Lutonian journalist James Cunliffe. Still in the fight, Jimbo?
Yeah, hanging in there, mate.
We're hanging in there. We'll review the game from top to bottom after this intro. Hello everyone, welcome along to another episode of the Luton Town Supporters Trust podcast. As I said before the intro, we are reviewing Luton 1, Notts Forest 1. Before we go into the game though, James, let's read out a couple of shout outs for correct scores that we had from the preview episode. Not a great deal of time for people to get them in, but two people got the right one nevertheless. Luton _ G-Man Rock 1-1, Forest equalised in the 99th minute. That was never going to happen. They took all their attacking players off by then. But correct score, well done. And also, we're feeling in a good mood, aren't we? So, Ray Sue's Travel Channel, your heart might have said 2-1, but we go with the head on this programme. And that's, you said 1-1 with your head. So well done to both of you. As promised, shout outs to everyone who gets the correct score. At which point did you think the game was going to end 1-1?
I didn't.
it was one of those, wasn't it, that we knew we were going to be knackered. It was so obvious. We kind of hoped and prayed that Rob was sort of telling Porky's that, and that he was going to put Sambi in there somewhere along the lines. He didn't. But don't matter what these boys have got left until the final whistle blows. If you hang around and let them hang around, they will nab you on the line. And they've done it last Saturday at Crystal Palace, and they've done it again Saturday.
There's one. I didn't see it coming the entire game. Everything's against Luton. It continues to be everything's against them. And then you throw on Bez, who knows where the net is, but he hadn't scored in the Premier League at that point. But you give him a sniff and he does the business. And now he's scored in every division for Luton. He's also scored in Step 5 for Cambridge. And I think he scored in the Eastern Counties League or something like that for their youth team as well. So he's done the rounds, and that was... you know, it's kind of a, you talked about poetic justice for a different reason, but it was his 150th Luton appearance, and he goes and gets his first Premier League goal to rescue a point that keeps Luton in this fight. And I think that, story that writes itself, really.
Yeah, we won't focus too much on Luke just now because we will hear from him later in the podcast. James caught up with him. Of course, he caught up with him, our hero from Saturday, but he was literally the last senior player left that's not a goalkeeper. So, you know, that's the kind of bare bones that we're getting to. And it doesn't help when you play 14 men either, does it? I mean, we'll come on to the referee a little bit later in the podcast because they're getting worse. There's no way you can claim that they're not getting worse. Team, though, James, I just alluded to the fact there was no... We kind of hoped that Rob would get Sambi in there in some way, shape or form, but there wasn't. So just the one change, and that saw Issa Kabore move from right wing back to left centre back instead of Deiki Hashioka. Pelly came in, and fair play to your pal, considering you haven't started a game for a long while. That was a seriously, seriously good effort. He played in front of the midfield alongside Ross Barkley, and it was Jordan Clark that went further forward in that sort of one of the two behind the striker role. I suppose that's all Rob had left, really. He couldn't throw Hashioka to the Wolves again after Wednesday night. So, but fair play to Issa Kabore. He was up against a tough campaigner in Divock Origi, but he gave as good as he got. And nothing sort of came down through Kabore's sort of... I mean, to be fair to Kabore, he's played every position in the game bar up front, hadn't he? But, a really good effort, actually. In fact, since that kind of... switch off against Aston Villa, he's put in three really, really good performances.
Yes, he really has. And he was in good form as well before he went to the AFCON. and then obviously didn't get in the side for a long time afterwards. But he's putting some, yeah, really good performances. I can't fault the lad. He's trying, as they all are. They're putting their bodies on the line. I mean, literally, because yet again, it's two more injuries, hopefully not serious ones. But how many times have we been saying that about not serious ones, and then you get setbacks and stuff. So, you know, Penny got one of them. And for me, that was Penny's best performance of the season. He's not had many, but, I thought he was outstanding, really. And he's, when you need somebody to step up and people write him off, but he's done it in the Premier League, really. You know, I made him my man of match, even though he went off injured, because he was that good all action, really. He made one unbelievable block early doors against Divock Origi, which
led to the injury.
I mean, he's feeling his knee as well, wasn't he? And then he's made some important attacking moves forward. The one that he crossed, that he chipped over a Forest player, got to the byline, smacked it into the 6-yard area, and how Williams has scuffed that not into the net is infuriating, because he'd done all the hard work. But yeah, I thought he was outstanding, and then gets clattered into the advertising hoardings, and off he goes. He walked past me in a boot in the mix zone afterwards, but he didn't look like he was overly affected by it. He wasn't on crutches and he was moving quite freely, so hopefully it's a precaution.
Yeah, precaution to keep swelling down is how I understand that is, from some contacts that I've used. Why would you write Pelle Roddick and Panzu off? You can't still be doing it 10 years on, can you? I mean, the bloke's a legend. He's not getting a statue at Power Court for no reason. I don't know if he's getting a statue. I'm only jesting, but he should damn well get the statue. Yeah. Or the gaff named after him, one or the other. Because, you know, he's been absolutely immense. And I said, didn't I, it would be fantastic if he scored a banger. Well, actually, it was his mate from League Two that did the job for us. First 15 minutes, I thought this was going to be a very, very good day, because of all the players in the Premier League that you give the whole of Bedfordshire to, I'm pretty sure Ross Barkley's got to be on the lowest part of the list. But hey, fair play to you, Notts Forest, because you gave him the whole of Bedfordshire in that first 15 minutes. He nearly scored with a first long range shot. Goalkeeper just got down and kept that out. Second one swerved all over the place that he pushed out, and a third one hit the post. You thought it's only a matter of time before Ross Barkley does something magical and gets us going. The first 15 minutes, we really did come out of the traps. I know Origi should have scored in the first couple of 3 minutes, tried a fancy down finisher that wouldn't have got to the goal line even if Issa Kabore wasn't there. But once we'd ridden that, not even storm, that chance, it was the Barkley show for 15 minutes. Every time he got the ball, he had an ocean of space to drive into, and he don't need inviting twice.
Yeah, Roy the Rover stuff, really, wasn't it? And he thought that that's what you need, a player of his magnitude to step up and do the business. And yeah, it's unfortunate. He's got two on target, so that's what you've got to do. The other one, not quite, but, you know, it was quite some performance for a little while. And then really after that, Forest did come back into it. And by the time they scored their goal, they were knocking on the door a little bit. I mean, not smashing the door down, but knocking on the door. And it's just so frustrating, because Reece Burke had kept one off the line. Unbelievably so. I mean, that is one hell of a block. If there's ever a block of the season, then that has got to be up there. To stop that on the line. And then, you know, just a couple of minutes later, he just loses Wood, who slips around the back of him, and it's fairly routine finish for Wood. And what's that, three against Luton this season from him. And it just shows you, doesn't it? Because, I mean, he's not particularly highly rated anywhere in football, I wouldn't have thought so. But he knows where the goal is, and if you stick it in the air, in the box, then he's pretty effective.
Yeah, he is, yeah. I mean, the game changed after 15 minutes because men 12, 13 and 14 started getting involved, didn't they? I mean, the referee was an absolute nonsense from start to finish. Some of the decisions he gave were baffling, wrong, and just... So, well, it's no surprise, is it, that they've got a former referee in the stand. They've been bitching and whinging all for about the last fortnight since that Liverpool drop ball, about decisions going against them, and now all of a sudden they get every single decision going in their favour. You're right about that Reece Burke clearance. I mean, not just the clearance, But the fact that he just charges, they highlighted it on Match of the Day. The fact that he doesn't stop, he just keeps on going, charging. I mean, Origi shouldn't give him the chance to clear it. Every, you know, the top strikers in this league, we mentioned in the sort of preview podcast, they hadn't scored for three games. But at the same time, we did say their front four are a threat.
Yeah.
There's got to be a reason why they're not scoring goals. Well, you just saw it there, didn't you? If that was a Liverpool striker or Hoyland or, you know, one of the top strikers, they're in the top bins.
Yeah.
He drives it into the bottom corner where he's allowed a defender to get into it. A much better finish than his first one, which, like I say, wasn't even going to get to the goal, even if Kabore wasn't there. But ultimately, you give a defender a chance. You can't really complain when he then gets in the way and keeps it off the line. My biggest fear, though, was that Kaminski didn't realise that he'd blocked it and ball was going to hit Kaminski. But luckily, he just kind of reacted as it bounced off of him, because I think Origi was closing in for a moment. But yeah, from there, we just couldn't get composure, could we? We couldn't get organised, really. And that was the thing. And if you look at the goal, it's so annoying. I mean, to be fair, Kaminski's cleared the ball quite a way up. But when we're unorganised, is he better off just banging it in the stands? I suppose the ball comes in just as quickly as it goes out in this division, doesn't it? But then the header comes forward. Kabore's kind of not sure whether to go with Williams or Gibbs-White. Then Mengi's not sure whether to go with Gibbs-White and close him down or go back and deal with the cross. Me personally, and it's so easy to say, sat there, particularly after it, but the threat's Wood in the middle, really.
Yeah.
Not the crosser. If he happens to cross it, just be there to get rid of the cross. But, you know, we're talking split seconds decisions from inexperienced defenders. You can't really call him out for that. He chose Gibbs-White, didn't block the cross. And then, like you say, Wood's lost Burke and nothing Kaminski can do with the finish, and we're 1-0 down and up against it.
Yeah, it was so disheartening at that point, because Luton had been on top, were playing well, really. I mean, they'd had their chances, let's be fair to them, the ones that you pointed out from Origi. But Luton had been given as good as they got as well. And yeah, and we talked about it so often, didn't we? You can see the first goal, it cuts the atmosphere, really. And you know, it wasn't the Watford and Sunderland levels that Rob Edwards had called for in the first place, but it whatever there was, it cut it anyway.
It was better. It certainly wasn't a Sheffield United situation. It was a better atmosphere. You just ultimately, everyone knows you're 10 games from the end. You can't sell a dud, really. Do you know what I mean? It's like, if we were 24 points adrift, knowing that if you lost, you went down, then that might be different, but we're not. And it's hard, and, you know, there's no energy in the players to lift it's just different. It's not a derby. It's not a playoff semi-final. There's not that jeopardy on it. Maybe if it's Fulham or we're in that situation, then it's a completely different ball game. I understand Rob wanted the noise and everything else. And actually, I think we did get to them in that first 15 minutes. But also, they've got a few players who've been here before, so they kind of knew what it was all about. Toffolo at left back, he played in the playoff semi-final against us, didn't he, for Huddersfield. Gibbs-White will have been here before. One or two others sort of dotted around. I think Alanga was part of that Man United squad that come down here in the Carabao Cup a couple of 3 years ago. So a few of them, you know, it's not like they were there for the first time, so... Yeah, it did silence it. Of course it silenced it, because, you know, at that point, everyone's like, oh shit, this is really getting away from us now in terms of the survival battle. But thankfully the boys on the pitch didn't think that, you know, and kept on going, as they always do. I thought we were level 5 minutes from half time. For the corner that you mentioned that came about from the Williams clearance, which, I mean, 9 times out of 10, that's in the top corner, isn't it? That clearance, how he's got that over the crossbar, I've no idea. I mean, Pelle did brilliantly to go past Murillo in the first place, lifted it over his head. And a really, we've said so many times, haven't we, on these podcasts this season, we get into these positions, no problem. And the final ball's crap. Well, the final ball wasn't crap this time. Unfortunately, it was just Reece Burke who was attacking it. He's not a natural attacker. He's more a defender. Had it been Carlton Morris, it was 1-1 for all ends, for all money. But from the resulting corner, ball comes over. It gets recycled back out, doesn't it? It comes over and Tedemengi controls it, belts it home, and everyone, he's off doing a fancy dance and yeah. Everyone's happy. You know, we've probably got what we deserved out of the half. So I don't think we deserve to be behind over the course of the 45 minutes. And then out of nowhere, a referee's whistle goes. And I haven't seen a conclusive angle that says to me that he handballed it. Oh. All the TV cameras I've seen have been from the main stand side. And you can see it hits his thigh. But there's nothing, and you can see that his arm is in the vicinity, but there's nothing actually that shows that he hits it. And if you watch the West Ham game or see the highlights of the West Ham game later, they have exactly the same thing with their winning goal, only they can't see a conclusive angle there because the goalpost's in the way, yet they still change the decision. The only thing I would say is Mengi didn't seem too surprised when the goal was chalked off, so maybe he did handball it, but bloody unlucky.
Yeah, I got a few angles of it in the press box, and it does hit his arm, but he's not moved his arm to the ball or anything. So the ball comes over, and he almost controls it with what WWF fans of the 1980s will recognise as the bread box, and his arm's by the side of him, so it hits him on the thigh almost, and does touch his arm. There's an argument to say that it may be that alters the trajectory of the ball, not hugely, I wouldn't say, but it does, it is there. But then the frustration of it for me, and I've not heard anyone talk about this, is the inconsistency of that action, because if he's defending a cross and it does exactly the same thing and they call for a penalty, it'll go to VAR and they'll say his hand's not in an unnatural position, no penalty. So why would that be different in the other box when you're going to score a goal? It's a very frustrating one.
That's where we are with this stupid handball rule though, isn't it? For an attacking point, if you get any benefit from it, it's a handball. So by the letter of the law, if it did strike his hand, then it should be written off. But you're right, in two different situations. Had it been the other way around, had their defender have done that, then it would have been crack on. I don't see how the same action can be different. Two ends of the pitch, that's something that they need to sort out. I mean, they need to sort so much of VAR out in the summer, but that's certainly something that they need to sort out. And hopefully we get a Euros where VAR works and we can start to learn from it, because it's just an absolute nonsense. As I say, more controversy in the West Ham game this weekend, even more controversy in the Burnley-Brentford game this weekend. Four games this weekend, and three of them are huge VAR fuck-ups or controversy. I mean, 75% of your games, Jesus Christ. So yeah, we don't go in 1-1. We do go in 1-0 down, and I think it was pretty obvious there was going to be no Alfie Doughty coming out. I mean, people behind me were calling him like a sulking child and all of this. I'm like, fucking open your eyes, for Christ's sake. The boy couldn't move to start the game. He still can't move. He's still giving everything he can. He took a knock, didn't he, when he rescued a ball on the touchline, and he came out of that quite gingerly. Despite that, he set up what we thought was the equalising goal. You know, give the boy some slack. He's played every minute possible in recent games. I think the only time I can remember him resting was 20 minutes against Everton in the Cup when they brought Joe Johnson on. Apart from that, he's played every game, and apart from the few minutes that he missed at Liverpool when he got wiped out in that challenge, when he thought they'd put us back in the game with that cross, absolutely knackered. I believe they're saying it's a hamstring injury he's got, but my understanding is it's just general fatigue. And the week on the beach, he'll be okay. So yeah, Alfie's off, and it's all change, isn't it, at this point? And then Corley Woodrow comes on for him. I think we've moved Chio from the right to the left, and we've got Kabore, and literally anyone who could move at that point has moved. The second half kind of started quite badly, didn't it? They were through on goal within about 30 seconds. Thankfully, Gibbs-White hit Kaminski with his shot. And then they've had another chance, haven't they? They played, to be fair, nice 1-2 between Alanga and Chris Wood. Alanga shoulder barges, if I'm being kind, Chio out of the way, and then yet again tries another fancy finish. Kaminski makes a great save. Ted Mbengue on the line to stop his former Manchester United colleague from putting them 2-0 up. And then from there onwards, it changed.
how unlucky can Luton keep getting with these injuries? Because it's ridiculous the amount of players that are out, but they're all key players as well. Doughty, one of the standout performers for Luton this season. Pelly on the day, absolutely fantastic. But you've got your top scorer out, your talismanic captain has a cardiac arrest, your Osho, who gives everything, he's gone.
Dynamite central midfielder.
Yeah, Jacob Brown, who was really coming into his own in the pressing style that they'd adopted really since that Brentford game. Not that they weren't a pressing team anyway, but they changed things up a bit. It's just all over the place, and that's why I think really you've got to be quite impressed with Luton hanging in there and getting anything from that game, because Nottingham Forest weren't light really anywhere. As far as I'm aware, they haven't signed any more like players for 25, 30, 40 million that weren't on the pitch. And Luton have got a whole team that cost less than 20. Well, all the summer signings cost less than 20, which is probably entirely less than Gibbs White. They've got about 11 players to possibly pick from, and most of them were signed on a free. And Nottingham Forest have spent hundreds of millions of pounds to be 3 points ahead of Luton and still in the mire of a relegation fight with points deduction potentially still to come. It's admirable from Luton's point of view that is the case, because it shouldn't be when that's happened. And when, you know, when Forest fans were giving it the big un on the YouTube comments of the preview podcast, hello everyone, you know, they were talking they've been in the Premier League forever. And they haven't. This is their second season.
Yeah, I checked my notes with regards to them getting promoted to the Premier League. Would you believe they got promoted at the same playoff final that we got promoted just 12 months earlier?
Yeah.
Incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And they're talking like they've got one comment banging on about, well, we've got a minted owner. But, okay, you've got a minted owner that's broke the rules because you're up for a charge. And see where that gets you. You've got a minted owner that doesn't know where you've come from. 20, 23, 24 seasons in the second or third tiers, and then you don't want to give any money to the to the Football League as one of 10 teams in the Premier League that don't. Scandalous, really. But the fact remains, they were talking like they beat us all the time. And how many games have they not beaten us for?
Again, I'll check my notes. That'll be six.
Six, exactly. So six games they've not beaten us for, yet they're amazing. And only 3 points above Luton, because their team, which I'm going to shout out to Mark the Hatter on Twitter, worked out that they've spent over £330 million in the last season. And Luton have barely spent a penny. And they are well in the shit. They can't beat Luton, apparently.
Absolutely, yeah. I saw a post on Twitter from one of their fans, and hey, there are some good Notts Forest fans out there, so you know, we're not picking on them all as a collective, but the ones that posted on YouTube on our preview podcast, I mean, it's blatantly obvious that most of them, the closest they've been to a football ground is the one they built in their underpants out of Lego, isn't it? I mean, it's
but that's what I'm talking about. So I'm not talking about there's every fan base has good fans and bad fans, but all the ones that were on our YouTube comment, bar one who was reasonable, you know who you are, were they've got their opinions way out of whack. And apparently we were rude, even though we bigged up your front four, who were pretty good. But then we told you about the facts of Premier League financial charges and this story about not wanting to give £900 million to the Football League, even though you've been there most of the people watching this, the demographic of people would have been only supporting that club in the Championship and the division lower when they got relegated. Don't forget that. So it's bizarre. It really is bizarre. But I hope you're doing all right. And that you you had a good day.
Yeah, but for the ones that have got ideas of delusion, you know, I saw someone on Twitter, again, it's not exactly the most sort of worthwhile sort of platform to base opinions on, but said it was like a Premier League team against a Championship team. No, it wasn't, mate, because the Premier League team would have been 10 up and your lot couldn't finish their dinner. So, no, wasn't like that at all. A couple of interesting incidents in that second half, James. They both involved Murillo, who, to be fair, I think as a defender, he looked really, really good. Generally, when I say, I think he's Brazilian. If he's not, I apologise, but I think he's Brazilian. Generally, when I see a Brazilian defender, I think aye, because, you know, they all play, don't they? But none of them really, with the exception of Thiago Silva, none of them really want to defend. But this boy could defend. But early on in the second half, fouled Carlton Morris, trod all over his calf, knew exactly what he was doing there, got away with it. And again, technically, he's done nothing wrong with Pelly, but surely you've got a responsibility to the safety of your opponent. The ball's out of play, or it's about to go out of play. You don't have to shove him with that excess force, knowing that there's a sponsor board right there. And yeah, okay, sure, it's the way our ground's made up and everything else, but no one else does it. Just ease him in so that you ease it out of play. There was extra force there. He knew he was going to get away with it. He knew what he was doing, but ultimately he's injured an opponent there when he didn't need to injure him.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably overly forceful, but he's also landed very awkwardly as well. I mean, he's gone smack his head into the hoardings, as well as rolling his ankle, while also having a dodgy knee from earlier in the game. He's had a full gamut of injuries there. It's a nasty one.
Just step in front of him, though, and see the ball out. There's no need to absolutely muller him like that. I mean, even if you shove him, just shove him. There is still enough space between the pitch, the sponsor board, and the wall the other side. That just got dangerous, and it didn't need to. I didn't like it.
No one did. I mean, it's nasty, and you can hear it. I could hear it very clearly over the other side of the pitch from the Bobbers, and it was a loud old bang. And, you know, Pelly doesn't stay on the ground. He's made of, you know, steel, that guy. And he looked fairly dazed for a while, didn't get up, and then obviously tried to run it off because that's what he's like, but didn't work. And he went down on the turf and he was off. And you're like, how is this luck? There is no luck when the best player in the park for Luton goes off. You can't say that he's been overworked in his this season at all, really. He's had to have a bit part role, really, for much of it, which is something new to him ever since he moved into midfield, for sure. But all through the leagues, he's been a mainstay. That one season where he was injured all the time, and then after that, he never got injured at all, did he? And then, to see him go off was disheartening after Doughty had already gone off, because there wasn't many other players creating much in an attacking sense. Clark wasn't having one of his best games. His touch was off, and everything that went to him sort of bounced off him, and then attacks broke down. It was frustrating. And yeah, at that stage, which is probably why the crowd was so quiet, really, it just felt like, well, this is just a game too far. I mean, we all knew it was a possibility, because you can't keep going and going on a third game of the week as well with absolutely no players, and the ones that you've got are battered and bruised and knackered and demoralised from the Wednesday game, for sure. But they kept in it, and that's all you've got to do. You've got to fight, haven't you?
Absolutely, and that's the one thing these boys will always do. We know that. We've seen that in the 29 games from start to finish, maybe with the exception of the 45 minutes on Wednesday. So, yeah, I didn't like that about Murillo, but where you've got to hold your hands up and say, fuck me, that is class. It's the free kick. Because...
Oh, the one he's tried to bang in from age.
I mean, obviously, Kaminski was nearly done by Eze last Saturday in a similar situation, not from a free kick, but open play. So they must have worked out that his starting position is quite high, in line with the fact that our defensive line is quite high. But to ping that with that accuracy, I mean, it's a brilliant save from Kaminski as well, because he's not under the bar when he tips that over. He has to get a serious hand to that. If he just gets like an Onana hand to it, that still goes in. That is an incredible piece of skill. So yeah, I didn't like the physicality, that he knew what he was doing and knew he would get away with it. I'm not saying he should have been booked or anything like that. I'm not. I'm just saying you don't need to do it. But that free kick was genuine quality.
It was. I can't think of a game, though, to be fair, where Thomas Kaminski hasn't had to make 2, 3, 4, 5 saves. There was another one. He did that. He also blocked Gibbs White, and then when he ran through, there was another one, which it doesn't come to mind at the moment, but you know, he's had to play his part to keep that scoreline down. And, that would have been the worst thing if that went in, because it was already sort of moving quite flat and slow. And they were defending low as well, which, as we saw against the Sheffield United game, when Luton had more players to choose from and more options to come off the bench, it was just difficult to break them down, which is a concern, going forward, I suppose, but we'll deal with that when we come to it. If that went in, it would have just been all over.
Yeah, it would. Well, I mean, if any of them, you know, if they'd gone 2-0 up at any point, that was it. I don't think we'd have had it in us to go and get two goals. But I mentioned in the preview podcast, James, they were 1 win in 13 in all competitions inside 90 minutes going into the game at Kenilworth Road. They're now obviously 1 win in 14. And you can see why, because at 1-0, off comes every attacking player, who's replaced with a much more defensive-minded player, with the exception of whoever it went off for Callum Hudson-Odoi. But Felipe came on, Dominguez came on for Gibbs-White, and all of us, you know, and they brought another fullback on and gone three at the back with two wing-backs. Sorry, brought another centre-back on and gone two at the back with two wing-backs. And slowly and slowly, they got deeper and deeper. And it was so reminiscent of last Saturday. It was untrue. Crystal Palace did the exact same thing. If there is one thing you don't do to this Luton side, you do not hang around with them when it's 1-0, because they score goals. They are now on the longest consecutive scoring run in the Premier League as of right now, after Tottenham were blanked on Saturday night. 17 games consecutively that they've scored in since that Manchester United away game back in November, I think it was. 19 if you include against Premier League teams, if you include Everton and Man City in the cup. The one thing that is a guarantee with this team is they're going to score a goal. So why, when you're 1-0 up, you would take everyone off and go on the retreat, when you've already coughed up 19 points from winning positions this season, when you can't defend a set piece for love nor money, and we saw that they couldn't with the corner in the first half that Mengi scored from. You just knew what was coming, and much like last Saturday, it came, and it came in the last minute. And obviously Luke Berry's replaced Jordan Clark, who, as you said, wasn't having his finest game. It was literally the last throw of the dice. It was only Hashioka of any kind of seniority of an outfield player who didn't come on. And obviously he wasn't going to throw him straight on after the struggles that he had on Wednesday night. And that's, although he was ready to come on when the equaliser happened, actually. Corner, we finally get a corner. We struggled to get set pieces, didn't we? We just couldn't get no one out wide to get the set pieces. But finally we got a set piece. Chio's actually had Toffolo on toast for a little bit, hasn't he? He's got him in the book. So we've got the corner down that right-hand side. I thought, you know, that he brought Berry on to take some set pieces, because at Everton in the cup game, it was Berry's corner to Woodrow. But no, Ross Barkley took the corner, and that's absolutely fine. Obviously, Ross has scored from a few corners this season, so I thought that's why it was. But you could see there was an overload at the back post. You know, there was Burke there was Mengi there, there was Chong. So Chong was on the goalkeeper. There was Berry in and around that area, and obviously Morris was in that area too. So you knew where the corner was going. Didn't exactly telegraph it. And Burke wins the header on the edge of the box, heads it down. If Berry didn't get it, Chong would have done. But I'm delighted that it was Berry that got it. Swiveled, volleyed, under the keepers, through the keeper's legs. Thankfully, this time, Williams' clearance didn't get over the crossbar, got under the crossbar. And the relief, as much as the celebration, was just brilliant.
It was, because I thought that the game was done. Even despite all these late goals that keep happening, there's going to be a time where it doesn't. And
did you think it at that point, though, or did you sense it like me? Hang about, this is a team who don't win many games of football. They're taking every attacker off. They're trying to see it out. They've missed God knows how many chances. I mean, like I say, it could not have been any more reminiscent of Crystal Palace last Saturday if you tried. All that was different was they were wearing white and blue as opposed to red and blue of Crystal Palace. It was the exact same film with pretty much the exact same ending.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't, to be honest. I was firmly in the camp of, well, Luton's race is run here because nothing has gone right. More injuries in the game. The referee seems to favour everything that Forrest did. Somebody put on Twitter, fair play to you, said Darren Ingham goes to sleep in Forrest bed sheets. It just felt like that.
With his Forrest pyjamas on.
Exactly. And so it gets to the 89th minute and hadn't really had much change out of, like you say, set pieces or anything. And really, every time a ball had gone in, they're quite big, those Forest defenders, and they dealt with it quite well. So I'm glad that they didn't on this occasion and fell asleep somewhat. Burke's head is fantastic. You have to give it. But Berry still has a lot of work to do there because he has to swivel. It's not like a 90-degree turn that I think he has to give it.
Near enough 180, isn't it?
Give it the Strictly Come Dancing vibes there and get on that. And to hit it with such power that it goes through a bunch of legs and whoever's on the line can't keep it out is a credit to him. But how many times have we seen him do it throughout the divisions? And I think everybody was delighted by that. I want to give a shout out, actually, because Mike Simmons from the Luton News, who I sit next to in the press box, he called it at half time that Bez is going to come on and score. So well done, Mike.
Yep, no, credit where it's due, Mike. And we know he watches as well. So, great shout, that one. You know what? Honestly, I'm not just sitting here saying it after the event. After all these chances got missed, you can just see why they don't win games of football. You know, it wasn't like the game. They'd done the same thing at their place, right? 2-0. So they're slightly further ahead. You kind of thought in that game, well, 2-0, they'll see it out from here. Off came everyone. Joe Worrell and the likes came on. Within 10 minutes, we're back in the game. To do an exact replica at 1-0 baffled me. But yeah, no, I didn't know if the goal was coming, but I knew a chance was going to come because we always get the chance and we hadn't had the chance in the second half, had we really? Yeah. And yeah, fell to the right place, right man at the right time to fire it 1-1, 7 minutes of injury time. How's there only 7 minutes? Yeah. I mean, every time Gibbs White stopped, he spent 30 seconds on the floor in that second half, telling Kenilworth to fuck off and everything else. Mm-hmm. Not the wisest idea you've ever had in your life. Probably not going to play here again very often, so don't need to worry about it. It's only 7 minutes. Should have been pushing double figures because the Pelly incident took at least half of that.
Yeah.
To be honest, when the 7 went up and we've equalised, I'm happy with the point. So 7's okay, but it should have been more.
Yeah, I was thinking, don't throw it away as well, because they went down Luton's end a couple of times and just thinking, don't hang a cross up there for somebody to nod in. And
well, that was
we've seen it so many times.
Well, that was the crazy thing, wasn't it? Andros Townsend went and got the ball back and was like charging around like a bull in a china shop to go and get it back. And I'm like, build a fucking thing in the stand. Yeah. Get it, you know, get it away from, like you say, they're issues. However, the first minute of injury time, there's a foul on Kabore down the left-hand side. Sorry, down our right-hand side, their left-hand side, by Toffolo again. The linesman's flagging and Mr. England completely ignores him. Now, if he gives the free kick, Toffolo has to go. It's as simple as that. It's exactly the same as the one that he's booked when he took Chio out. So Toffolo's off the pitch. We have those seven minutes of injury time against 10 men, and they're struggling to defend set pieces or balls into the box with 11. There could have been a winner there for us. It's just an absolute shambolic refereeing decision. I mean, you've all seen the video of the Ross Barkley tackle that's gone viral on the internet, and quite rightly so, because that is a perfect tackle. I've no problem. Well, I have got a problem with him pulling it up as a foul, but Gibbs White makes the exact same tackle 60 seconds later on the opposite side of the pitch. It's crack on. Feel free. No way. I mean, there probably is nothing in it, right? So to the genuine Notts Forest fans, there's probably nothing in this, but when you've got a former referee sat in the stands, right, and all this bollocks of reports and stuff and coming out with all this nonsense in his newspaper columns, you are throwing yourselves open to corruption arguments and things like that from all sets of fans and everything else. And as I say, they've bitched and whinged since that Liverpool drop ball a couple of weeks ago, and they got absolutely everything out of him on Saturday. And it's not the first time that referees have gone right against us, but there was no consistency in his decision making whatsoever. But He has to send Toffolo off. Why would you? They never ignore their linesman. It's not like he couldn't see him because they're all mic'd up and he'll have been shouting, woo, foul, foul, foul. But he has ignored him.
Yeah.
I've not seen a referee play advantage at Kenilworth Road all season. And now, because he's got to send a bloke off, and then go on, crack on. It's on the fucking halfway line. Where's the advantage?
It was one of the worst performances. I feel like
terrible.
I feel like we're saying this a lot, but that's only because the good ones are few and far between. But, you know, Sonny Singil had a great game
very good.
The other day, so fair play to him. So you've got to shout out the referees that do have a good game. But
got criticised for signing autographs.
Well, I mean, that's criticising for signing because he had a good game.
He did.
Yeah, but it was absolutely shambolic. The Barkley one is the one that was directly in front of me where I was sitting. He couldn't have timed that better. It can't be in the, I don't know what the interpretation is. It cannot be that just because he's fallen over, because.
Well, he does five rolls, didn't he? That's the thing.
It can't be that. He's got the ball. It's not malicious. It's not dangerous. It's just a good sliding challenge. So that one was bonkers. Carlton Morris was getting, you know, physically assaulted pretty much. Rillo hanging around his neck, raked down the calf, all that sort of stuff. And he was going ballistic because he just wasn't getting anything from it. And it's not rose tinted spectacles or hat tinted spectacles to say it. It was a shambolic, referee performance, and it stunts any momentum as well. I mean, there wasn't much anyway, but anything you could get going got blown up. And then, when you think you should have a free kick, nothing ridiculous.
I mean, not sending Toffolo off probably wouldn't have had an impact. I mean, there's 6 minutes left. Maybe they'd have seen the 6 minutes out. But he's going to play in the next game now, isn't he? Whereas he should be on the pitch playing the next game. So if he does something useful in that next game, then he gets to do it when he shouldn't be on the pitch. He should have been off for two yellow cards. He would have been booked. There's no doubt about that. Unless, you know, we had another Casemiro incident. Because it's exactly the same thing that he's just been booked for. Cynical, takes out Kabore.
Well, I mean, he booked Kabore early on, and then he's walking the tightrope of a red for nothing.
And I'm not even sure that's a foul.
That wasn't.
Gibbs White's on his way down long before he gets anywhere near Kabore.
Certainly wasn't a yellow, I don't think. And, right. But to give it that early, and then a number of their players making multiple challenges, bad ones, and not getting anything from it.
Eight fouls committed by the two centre-halves that started the game, Murillo and Bolly. Not a single yellow card anywhere to be seen. And don't forget, amongst those eight fouls, the incident between Murillo and Pelly wasn't one of them because nothing was given. Quite rightly so. It wasn't a foul. Yeah, if we see Darren England again in these last nine games, you've got to fear the worst, haven't you? Because that was not good. They nearly won it, didn't they? Ryan Yates flashed a shot. I'm not overly sure he was shooting or just getting the ball away from whatever he was doing. It fizzed past the post, and my God, thankfully it was a foot wide, because if it was in, it was in.
My heart was in my mouth for that one. No two ways about it. It was a rifle of a shot, wasn't it? And that's what I mean. It was like they still carried a bit of a threat going forward. Even though in that final, maybe 10 minutes before the 90 were up, it was Luton pushing because they'd decided to settle for that one and sit back low. But I mean, they sat back low anyway for the whole of the second half, really, because, and I don't blame them. It worked perfectly for Sheffield United. And it's just that other teams have come to Kenilworth Road and thought, well, we can blow you out of the water. Whereas these lot have clearly worried that they can't finish games off.
Sat quite low for a team who don't counter attack, don't they? Hello, YouTube comments.
Yeah, it was another one. We got told that they didn't counter-attack, which they clearly did. It's pretty much all they did. But, you know, I can't blame them for that. It's a tactic that Luton have struggled with before. And so when all that's happening, I wasn't seeing a goal. So when it comes, I was out of my seat. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Let's hear from the goal scorer then, Luke Berry, because, I mean, you can't not be anything but pleased for Luke Berry. I mean, he's come through the leagues with us. He had that horrible injury in League Two, didn't he? He hasn't had the minutes that he'd have wanted at the time. Since then, again, understandable. But he is Johnny on the spot whenever a late goal's needed, isn't he? And he popped up at just the right time. So James caught up with him after the game in the mix zone.
Talk to us about that winner then. I mean, you've scored in every division you've played for Luton in, and you've had to bide your time. A lot of time spent on the bench, but coming off. Yeah. And what were the instructions, and what does it feel like to score that goal?
Just go in there, try and sniff something out, and play a little bit higher. So Ross told Ross to go a little bit deeper, and just me try and sniff something. And thankfully, I did in there for the corner. I'm not normally in there for corners, so it's nice to be in there. Never going to win I might win a header here and there, but I was going to sniff something from the floor. So, yeah.
And you get to batter it through a couple of bodies, but was there? I mean, in previous divisions, you score a goal, you go and celebrate. Did you have to look around and think, "Oh my God, is VAR going to get into play or something?"
I don't know. It was a bit like the Millwall celebration where I just gone run to the main stand. But no, I didn't actually think about VAR. And then they were checking something. I was like, "What the hell? What they're checking? That would be horrible, wouldn't it? If I just ran celebrating this, yeah." But thankfully, they gave it.
I mean, because there was one that wasn't there in the end of the first half when Henton scored. And it's a strange one because, I mean, it sort of does hit his arm, but if that's a defensive one by the law, his arm's not in an unnatural position, you don't give it.
No, we only saw it from one angle. It didn't actually look like it. It was tight. It was like here, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I couldn't see it from another angle, but it would look tight.
Yeah. But, I mean, ultimately, you come away with a point and, you know, with all the adversity you're sort of facing, it's a good afternoon, isn't it?
Yeah. We had to not lose, really. If we lost that, 6 points is quite a big amount to come back from.
You, Pelly, and a couple of other lads have obviously been in a relegation dogfight at the Championship that went down to the last day. How much can you draw from that in this situation?
I think we can, yeah. It's just like we did today, staying in games, not being silly, taking every point when it comes. I think sometimes you can get sucked into, let's go for the win, let's go for the win. And then in these leagues, they can suck a punch and you go away with nothing. I think the key is to just pick up the points when we can, not be too greedy, and then the wins will come.
Well, must feel good to get a late leveler after the ones like Villa recently where they've...
To be fair, I don't think we're anywhere near evens there. I think we've been sucker punched a lot more than we've done people, so...
About time,
yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Love it. Once again, if you're listening to the review podcast for the first time, the mix zone at Kenilworth Road is the main reception corridor, and that's why you heard all of those trolleys in the background and things like that. We've tried our hardest to get rid of it, but you can't get rid of all of it, particularly when Bez isn't the strongest sounding voice in the world. And also, you could tell just how close to full time James was when he caught up with him. It was an equalising goal, not a winning one, but it sure as buggery felt like a winning one, didn't it?
I didn't realise I said it was a winner, but yeah, that's what I mean. It felt like with it. That's why I would imagine they're probably more disheartened by that result and Luton are more heartened by it, as it was in the Crystal Palace one, because Luton were dead and buried and then they come out of nowhere and get a goal and take a point, and then suddenly their what would have been the 6 point lead over Luton is now still only three, and they're still in the mix considering they haven't won that many games. It is a better one for Luton. Like we said in the build-up, I don't think we did say must win this time, but it was one we had to win. But when the day plays out like it did, in the way it did, with all the things that went against Luton, and you get a point and you're still in it and you're still within touching distance, I mean, it's kind of out of hands at the moment before the points deductions potentially come in. But it doesn't cut you adrift, which is the main thing.
But what it also does is it puts us a result behind Everton now, whereas we were two results behind them going into the game. Their game that they didn't play this weekend, incidentally, was the Merseyside derby. So while they've got a game in hand, you've got to think that 9 times out of 10 they're getting diddly from that.
Yeah.
So it puts us sort of a point closer to them. We focus so much on Notts Forest in these two games. Of course we have. They're the team that we're playing. But Everton have gone nowhere. Brentford have gone nowhere. They're only another point further on, Brentford, and they've got horrible next three games, much like ourselves. So, this fight is still well and truly on. Really good point that you raised with Luke Berry in that interview about the people that were here for the Great Escape, or the so-called Great Escape in the Championship. Much, much worse position than what we're in now. infinitely worse position than what we're in right now. And even in that last nine games, we took a 5-0 bopping from Reading, because I think we're all expecting to take a bit of a hiding from Man City, right? So if we match them up, we still lost 5-0 against Reading and still stayed up from a worse position 4 years ago. So, you know, there's no need to panic just yet. No one at the football club's panicking. We should absolutely stress that. They are all still in control of the situation. Not least the boss, Rob Edwards. And, well, we sent Jimbo along to the post-match press conference and hear the thoughts of Rob himself.
Well, the way the game was going, really pleased in the end. Yeah, it's been a challenging week, to say the least. And, look, I think not just football, life and everyone's lives, everyone going through stuff, everyone gets knocked down, everyone gets disappointments, everyone gets things go against them, and it's about how you deal with it and how you react. I think that's what's really important. I think this group have showed that's how you react. They've got so much character, and no matter what's thrown at us at the moment, we'll keep going. That doesn't mean we're always going to get points. I know that. We're not always going to play well, but they'll always keep going and keep fighting. And yeah, that's why I love them for that. It's a brilliant story, isn't it? To score in all five divisions now. As she was just reminding me, I said all four a minute ago in one of the interviews, but brilliant. Special moment for him, I think, for the football club, because it's, you know, he's a club legend, isn't he, with what he's done for this football club. And he's one of a number of them. And really special moment for him today. You just hope that, that something lands. I mean, when he's come on quite a lot this year now, I think maybe eight times or so, and he's been close on a number of occasions to something. I'm just thankful today in such an important game. He finished it really well. Yeah, I mean, it's difficult for us with a full group to be competitive in this league. So to be competitive, which we have, you know, we've drawn two games and lost a mad game by a single goal. You know, we've been competitive. That's hard anyway. Never mind with what we're missing at the moment. And I love the group of lads that are playing and fit and available at the moment, but to have nine senior players out and the two more go down today as well, it's difficult for us. And there's so many people playing out of position, you know, even if it's just one position down or up in a different kind of position. Issa on the left and Chio playing right back, really. It was hard for us to really get a rhythm and be at our best. We had lots of possession, but difficult to get behind Forest and create big chances. It was difficult. They defended well and low and slowed a lot of the game down in the second half, which is their prerogative. Thought the game was almost petering out, but again, we popped up in, with a set play that was important. And then we wanted to try and push. You know, the crowd are up for it, but couldn't find another. With where we would have been, you know, if we'd have lost the game, it would have been a blow that for us. So we can actually go into this break with it on a little bit of a high, even though we've not won the game. The manner of the performance and with everything that we've sort of gone through this week and with all the injuries, I think, you know, the lads have shown a lot of character.
Yeah, they have indeed. Not least bouncing back from Wednesday night to refuse to lose on Saturday. Probably not the points that we wanted from the three games. Certainly not the points that we deserved from the three games. But ultimately, the position's still the same. We're still well and truly in this. And as I said before, we heard from Rob, we've done this before. We can do it again.
Yeah, and not only have we done it before and in probably much more difficult circumstances, but when Nathan came in for that great escape run, he turned to all the players that had got him where he'd got with Luton, which included Pelly, included Berry and the likes. And again, if they have to do that, Pelly stepped up. Berry stepped up and got the goal and made difference. So they're contributing still. And people were writing them off whether they could do it in the Premier League. I mean, they've not played regular, but when you're called upon, you've got to come up and do something. And every single one, nearly every single player have. Like Woodrow got the goal at Palace and Berry gets the goal at the weekend. Pelly puts in a great shift. And that's what you've got to do. And that's why I think it's, the fight in this team is so impressive, because it goes throughout the whole squad, and knowing what this means to Luton, which is all important.
Yeah. we kind of take it for granted because it's there every week, but it should never be taken for granted because you see other teams not show that fight and that character. And if we stay in the league, that's a huge part of keeping us in the league. Let's talk about some key performers quickly before we go. James, Ted and Mengi. Brilliant block in the second half from Alanga, as we alluded to earlier on. He was just an absolute rock throughout the 90 minutes, really. His defensive performance was one of, I'm not going to lose today, and I thought he was brilliant.
He was, and he's been brilliant for some time now, considering his age and his inexperience. And that's what Luton have needed, really. I mean, yes, they've conceded goals, but there's been mistakes that have led to many of them. But in general play, he's been absolutely outstanding. And that's probably why he's got the England 21, under 21 call up for the first time for this international break. And it's great for him. It is. And I applaud him and congratulate him. England, please, please wrap him up in cotton wool. Play him if you want, but don't make him do extra shifts. Please be nice to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations to Tedden for that call-up. I mean, we've been on about Luton players playing for England all season, and we've had Joe Johnson at his age level. We've now got Ted and Mengi at his age level, and I noticed Henderson got injured for Ajax earlier. We could still have Ross Barkley for his age level. Gareth, you know it makes sense. Don't worry about Ben White and all this nonsense. Go and get Ross Barkley.
It makes sense to us, but you know what it'll do if that's the case. It'll just be straight on the phone to Manchester United and Kobbie Mainoo year round. That's what it'll be. Despite all the evidence and the stats that tell you Ross Barkley is one of the most outstanding midfield performers this season. It's just because he plays for Luton, isn't it?
It is. Let's hear from Ted and Mengi. He also stopped by for a chat with James after the game.
We're good to get a late goal. I feel like we deserved a lot more from that game. But yeah, it was a tough game. It was an important game for us. But at least we got something from the game, which we're happy about. And we can go into the break somewhat positive.
You got the ball in net as well. What did you make of that decision?
Yeah, thought I scored, but yeah, the referee made his decision. But yeah, we stuck at it and we eventually got the equaliser, so that was good for the team.
That's going to give you a big shout, a big chance when you come back from the break.
Yeah. I think when we come back from the break, we just got to keep it going. And I have all the faith in this team. We're surprising people each game that comes by. So yeah, I've got all the faith in this team that we can. No, we can. I definitely think we can stay up and we'll keep scoring and we'll keep challenging the opponents and we'll keep being the underdogs that we are.
In the 2021 call up for you the first time, I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I'm delighted really because I've had a tough couple of years with injuries. It's a real big achievement for me. I'm just going to take the opportunity with both hands and just do as well as I can. And then after that, focus is back on the Premier League and Luton.
Yeah, absolutely. Just come back healthy and not injured.
Yeah.
If we stay in this league and we're therefore able to keep hold of him, he's going to become a serious leader for this football club, isn't he?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think he really is. My worry is if they can't stay in the league, whether somebody comes in for him because he's been a very good player. He's young enough. He's now got getting England recognition under 21 level. So that's a worry. That's not, I'll park it for now. Cause I like Ted in there when he speaks and when the players speak and they say they've got absolute faith in the team and that they can still stay up. Yeah. You believe them. The result gives you that anyway, because you lose and then you're like, oh, then you start talking about, you're not mathematically out of it, but everybody knows you kind of are, really, aren't you? The way things have been going this last month or slightly more for Luton with injuries and late goals and obviously the Bournemouth one and losing 4-3. It all builds on top of each other and sort of leads you to believe that it's just not going to happen. But yeah. that's what can, these moments are really important. To score in the 89th minute in a game that Forest probably looked like, felt that they was going to see out, changes the complexion of everything. It makes them think that they can't hold on to Leeds either. So that's going to be important when they play, whoever they play in the running. And it just keeps looting in. The fact you've got to play Everton as well. Everton has still got to hear some charges. Forest are coming up. We hear Monday. So by the time you're looking at, you're listening to this, it could have already happened. So we wait to see what that is. It's just, I don't want it to get into the points deduction realm because it's going to get messy. But whatever the situation, after that goal, it's like, well, it's 3 points and that's doable.
Yeah, we're still in the mix without points deductions. That's for sure. Yeah, you're right about them and their incapability of holding on to Leeds. You wouldn't trust them to walk your dog, would you? I mean, bloody thing had never come back. We are right in the mix. Pelly was your man of the match. He wasn't my man of the match, but I did think he played really, really well.
I've been waiting for this because you teased this on WhatsApp for me.
I did. I mean, Reece Burks just had an absolute monster game of football on Saturday. The block off the line was good enough to start off with.
The assist, I suppose.
The assist just caps it right off. Yeah. It's just brilliant. The one thing we knew when we were doing these podcasts in the Championship is we had a Premier League defender if we could keep him fit. We still haven't quite kept him fit, but we know we've got a Premier League defender because he can carry the ball. He's athletic enough to do the job. He can go in with the, when the striker goes short, he's happy to press him there and he can still recover. He's everything about a Premier League defender without those Premier League muscles in his legs to keep him fit long enough. But that will change. They'll get to the bottom of it like they did with Pelly eventually. And when they do, this guy is so, so good. And was that fourth game on the trot? And he's getting better with each one. He was excellent on Saturday. He was my man match, but not by a long, long way. Because like you say, Pelly was good, but I just thought the key incidents, Reece Burke was there or thereabouts.
Yeah, he was. He was also in their goal as well, I suppose. It didn't quite track the run of Wood, but I mean, Wood does that to a lot of
yeah, no, teams. That's fair.
I wouldn't argue against it if you are putting it forward, which you are. So I'm not going to argue against it. He was very good. The block for me was outstanding. And somehow to get a controlled header in that really tense moment and knock it down for Bez, was clever, really. So, fair play to him. He's done the business at both ends of the pitch.
Yeah. I mean, what I like about the header is knock it down. So Berry hasn't got to chest it, bring it down and hit it, because he ain't going to have the time to do that. All Berry's got to do, much in the same way if you saw the Manchester United third goal against Liverpool, when McTominay puts Rashford in, all he's got to do is put it in the bottom corner. Once Berry's got round to face the goal, all he's got to do is fire home. He hasn't got to take a touch or anything else that we see defenders come along all too often. So, yeah, I thought Reece Burke was excellent. So glad that he's having a run of fitness, because I mean, listen, we've loved him on this podcast ever since the day he signed. He's an absolute top defender. The other one we need to give a proper shout out to Heath Chong looked like he was broken and battered when he left the pitch against Bournemouth. We didn't think he'd play. We assumed that there was something proper wrong with him. Thankfully, it was only an impact injury and he was fine. And he played the whole 90 minutes. He went out to left wing back when Doughty went off at the start of the half. He ended up in that usual sort of number 10 position or behind the striker position once we started swapping everyone around and things. And as I said right earlier on in the podcast, had it not have been Berry who scored, it may well have been Chong because he was there anyway. Credit to him. Yes, we're all putting our bodies on the line and everyone's, whether they've got knocks or not, whether they're in pain or not, if they can move, they play. But he's still done it. He played the whole 97 and however many minutes. And it was a good influence on the game.
It's been impressive over a good period of time now, because obviously there was that debate earlier in the season that is he a starter or is he better off the bench? And now he's out of necessity, really. He's a first team starter and he's been growing ever since into that role. And I think everything he does is positive and he's probing and good runs. He's got a bit of pace, works, he's great on the counter attack. Yeah, for the second goal against Bournemouth, wonderful outside of the boot, through ball, that sort of thing. So he can spot those passes. And I mean, this is everything we thought we were going to get anyway, because we saw him absolutely destroy Luton in a Birmingham shirt. And he hasn't quite hit those heights, but he's on the road to being consistent as well. And, yeah, it's really good for him. He's a very useful asset for this team, and now that he's a starter, he's one of those players that gets bums off seats. I think, so when he goes on a run, anything could happen. But it's less erratic now than perhaps it was before. So they're obviously doing some good work with him on the training ground, I think.
Yeah, they are. Runner games helps as well, doesn't it? And then finally, we've not spoken about him too often recently, but Ross Barkley. I mean, pulled the strings to start within that game, obviously buoyed by the confidence of his goal at Bournemouth, which was a brilliant goal at Bournemouth, actually. When you see it back, really is, he just lashes it home. The corner, pinpoint onto Reece Burke's head. So a huge part in the goal. You know, may well have set up another counter-attack had that perfectly good tackle been allowed to go. Just a brilliant footballer. We love watching him. We hope we stay in this league so we get to watch him beyond the end of this season. And we hope at some point Gareth gets his head out of his arse and watches him as well, and that we take him to the Euros.
Well, I can guarantee you that last one won't happen, because Gareth Southgate, he makes some odd choices, and all of them end in Henderson. So don't bet anything you've got on it, let alone anything you don't want to lose. But everything else, yeah, he's a top performer. I mean, when Bez comes on, he goes forward and Ross Barkley goes backwards, plays a bit deeper, which we've seen him do before, and he can do the quarterback thing in his sleep, really. I wonder whether it might be a good shout to get him on those corners again, really, because it's usually Doughty, isn't it? And like you say, when Bez comes on, he used to usually take the corners. So if he's going to do that every time, we know how good he is at spraying 60-odd balls. Surely he could be doing that from a corner, and get him on them.
Yeah, as I say, I was just surprised, because earlier in the season he flicked one on for Townsend to score at the back post, didn't he? And he scored against Chelsea, direct from a header from a corner as well. So he's actually a threat in the box. So I guess, you know, but yeah, of course he's going to take a decent corner. He's, you know, he's the best footballer I've ever seen in a Luton shirt, and may well see in a Luton shirt for plenty of time to come. That's it pretty much for this episode of the podcast. Just a couple of things. There's still people on social media, particularly in light of the fact that Joe Taylor scored a hat trick yesterday, asking why we can't bring him back. You may not have watched the Bournemouth Review podcast where I pointed it out. We don't blame you if you didn't. No one wanted to recycle that so soon. We cannot bring Joe Taylor back. In fact, we cannot bring any player back from their loan spell if they're in the Football League. The only ones we can bring back, I should say, outside of a transfer window, which of course we are now, the only ones we can bring back are the ones that are on loan at non-league clubs, because non-league have different transfer rules. So Jaden Luca, who's at Woking, if indeed we're stuck in midfield, but given that there were three youth team midfielders on the bench, we don't appear to be. He could come back, for example, but Joe Taylor can't come back. He is at Lincoln, unless they decide to send him back because of injury or anything. He is at Lincoln until the final day of the Premier League season. So just to clear that one up, we will do a deep dive next week. So if you've got any questions for us that you want us to answer, whether it be on personnel, whether it be on anything to do with Luton or even Premier League as a whole, give us a shout and we will answer as many of them as we can do. That will be out next week. So keep your eye out for that one. That is it for this podcast. Longer than normal, but it is the only one that we're doing this week. So we're giving you extra minutes.
I'm knackered.
Talked about a few extra things. Absolutely. You and me both. I'm running out of 23, 24 shirts to wear. We've been doing them that regularly.
We just sit here. We don't have to run around a pitch three times.
Absolutely. I've already gone back into last season's shirts. If you've heard any background noise throughout the course of this episode of the podcast, again, we have tried to dampen it down as much as possible. We're recording this the day after the Forest game, which which is St Patrick's Day. Obviously, there's a huge Irish community in Luton.
This is a Coke, not a Guinness.
It is. Yeah, this is a poor man's version of Guinness. Of course, there's a huge Irish contingent who are celebrating St Patrick's Day. So we've tried to dampen it down. But if you do pick up a little bit of background noise, that is what it's all about. Thanks for your thoughts and recollections, James. Really appreciate that. A good podcast in the end. Good result to do a podcast for in the end.
Well, yeah, in the 88th minute, I was thinking, how are we going to drag ourselves off the floor to get in here and do this?
I don't think we were. I think we were just going to put one of those BBC Two signs up with the long running beep for an hour and cracked on.
Yeah, but thank you, Luke Berry. You made my Saturday evening far, far better.
Indeed so. Yeah, even without gladiators to watch. Couldn't have gladiators because the referee was stuck in the bloody stand, wasn't he?
Scandalous.
Absolutely indeed. Didn't even bring Sabre with him either, did he? Eh? One job.
We don't need any more injured people at Kenilworth Road.
No, that is true. Yeah, get well soon, Sabre. And of course, all of the footballers, that's for sure. Thank you to all of you for watching or listening. Once again, so many people came up to me during and after the game on Saturday saying that they really enjoy the podcast, and also thanking us for doing the Bournemouth review one. Yes, you're right, it wasn't the easiest one we've ever recorded, but in for one, you're in for them all, aren't you? And so, yeah, we had to do that. More importantly, thank you for listening to that one, if you did, because no one needed reminding of what happened there. So, thanks for all of your support. We really, really do appreciate it, unless you're one of those stupid, idiotic Nottingham Forest commenters on these things.
There you go. He said your name right.
Well, it might be the last time we play them for a while. So,
well, that would be good for them because they never win.
It's very true. It's a good point. Thanks for watching, for listening. As I say, next episode will be the deep dive, which will come out sometime next week. We'll wait for the points deductions and everything to be confirmed before we get stuck into the meat and drink of all of that. Thanks to the Hightown Club for hosting our studio as always. Thank you to Sean Grant and the Wolfgang for our intro music. Thank you to Ed Smith Creative for all of the designs that you see on set. And until next time, my God, do we need this break. Come on, you Atters.
Can you believe it? We are Premier League! Yes!
I love this town. I love this town. I love this town. You know what I love about this town? It's actually you. Everyone in it has got these massive souls.